Hello and welcome to the In Context podcast. My name's Gary and I'm here with my friend Steve. Neil, how are you, sir?
Yeah, well, thank you, Gary.
So, yeah, we're just going to have a little bit of a conversation about church and culture in England, maybe in the UK, but especially England because that's where we live. And especially church and working with the working class, working in areas of deprivation. Reaching the least, the last and the lost, what that looks like, what support is out there or what support's not out there, who might be doing what within that work, and if there's no support, what support is needed, what's there, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I've been at this now 12 years, so... Just to give people an idea of where we've been working. Mm-hmm. So Oldham, the history of Oldham was in the 19th century. It was the richest town in Europe.
Wow.
All built off the back of cotton spinning. And then about 5 years ago, maybe within the last 10 to 5 years, it was called the most deprived town in England.
Big shift there, isn't it?
Yeah. So in 100 years, it's gone from richest in Europe to most deprived in England. And it now stays at that level. And Glodok, the little area we work in, that is almost 100% South Asian, Pakistani as an area. Mosques line the streets up from the church building.
How long has that been for? Is that quite new or is that like...
So
when's the shift in that been?
Yeah, so basically in the two big waves of immigration, in the 1950s, there was a load of Caribbeans who came... to work on buses and to work in the mill. So a lot of them came at that point. And then in the 1970s, we got lots and lots of Pakistanis to come over and work in the mills. So that was when the major wave came in the 70s. And that's built up. And as they've sort of stayed in Glodok, it depends on whose narrative you want to listen to.
Okay.
Some people would say Glodok was white, and everyone was very happy there, and then all the Asians moved in, and then everyone went, oh, this has gone downhill now, and moved out. That's one narrative. Another narrative is that Glodok was on the downturn and wasn't doing very well, and all the Asians moved in because that's the bit they could afford to live in.
Okay.
And then the white people moved out as they made a bit more money and left. So it depends on whose narrative you want to believe.
Okay.
But over the course of about 30 years, Glodok became increasingly South Asian.
Okay.
Until it's where it's now, where it's pretty well high 90% South Asian.
Hmm.
So when we're working there, I think we talked in the last podcast about how different working class communities look different.
Yeah.
So our area is more unusual compared to other Medhurst churches. A lot of guys are working on predominantly white council estates, dealing with white British people. We're the ones dealing with mainly South Asian, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, and then some working class white people. And then the history of our town. This is the other complicating factor. So people may or may not know about the 2001 Oldham riots. So they were the worst race riots we'd have had in Europe. And they were pretty well kicked off between the white community and the Asian community. Some of that had been stirred up from people coming in from outside the town, but nevertheless it was Asian on white, and the whole of Oldham's a bit like this, where it's very segregated. So you could literally go down one street and you're in an Asian area, and then you turn down the next street and now you're in the white area.
Okay.
And they just don't mix, and historically that meant you had predominantly white schools, predominantly Asian schools, all of that stuff going on with it. So it's quite I wouldn't call our area multicultural. People do, because they come down and they go, oh, there's loads of Asians here. It's multicultural. It's not, it's monocultural. It's just the monoculture in our area is Pakistani, not English.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think working in that environment, there wasn't a lot of resource when I started for support. I think the most you could hope for is like a book or something on how to reach Muslims.
Okay.
And that, frankly, there weren't that many of those either, because most people in most churches in the UK either aren't in areas where there are any Muslims around, or they're just not reaching them. And so it's not something people needed. So I remember coming, and I don't come from an area where I grew up with Asian people. So most of my life I spent in a village in South Oxfordshire, which was like really white. My secondary school, I think, had like 3 people in it who weren't white. You know, that was the sort of place I was coming from. I went to university in Liverpool 20 years ago, which, when I went, Liverpool was a really white city. Mm. And if you did see anyone who wasn't white, they'd probably be Chinese. That's who we had there. So it wasn't until I came to Manchester I really came into contact really with Asian people. And even then, we lived in Manchester to start, and in Manchester, Asian people, white people, everybody lives all on the same street, and that's normal. And that didn't trouble me. I didn't find that difficult or anything like that. That seemed like what I expected. And then I came up to Oldham, and suddenly you've got loads of Asian people, loads of white people, but none of them live together. Okay. And none of them go to the same places. And there's almost nowhere in the town where people hang out together. So I think we talked on the last episode about, if you're going into a deprived area, you need to be present and you need to be known. Come to Oldham, where do you go?
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like there is so much divide within the area. Even in like, so like subcultures and subcultures within the culture of Oldham.
So the way we had to deal with that is the church had to become the hub.
Yeah.
So I know in like, certain communities you go, well, we'll go down the pub, that's where everybody goes. Well, you're not getting Muslims down the pub.
Yeah.
And you might go, well, okay, to reach Muslims, I'll go down the mosque. Well, you're not getting white Brits down at the mosque. So you can't do that.
Yeah.
Even when they sort of play football, a lot of the time you've got like Asians will play football, and with them within the Asian community, and white guys will play there. Half the Asians don't even play football anywhere, they'd rather play cricket. You know, so you just get these divides everywhere. And the only way we could get round it is by going, well, the church is going to have to be the hub. So strangely, like our building is positioned very, I think, helpfully. So it's right on the edge of the town centre. We're not quite in the town centre, but you can be in the town centre in 2 minutes. We're in Glodwick, which is the Asian area. But then 100 yards down the way is like a massive municipal park that everybody goes to that. Mm-hmm. That's quite handy. And one side of that is a white council estate. And then behind us, where our building is in the other direction, is a white council estate. So we've got just about reach into these different areas, which is quite good. And the things that we do, the way we serve the community, we generally have served needs often. Mm-hmm. And the reason we do that, so we do run what we call a food club, which we're very clear isn't a food bank. Mm-hmm. You have to pay to be a member. You have to buy the food, but it's like cut price stuff. Yep. But when people come in for that, that's got Asian people, that's got black people, that's got Eastern European people, that's got white Brits coming in. I mean, we are without question the most multicultural thing in our area.
Wow.
And one of the only places where people of all ethnicities will come. And I think that's just a brilliant thing for the gospel.
Yeah, that's great.
Could you go down the local mosque? You're not going to get white people there.
Yeah.
Very, very occasionally might have one white convert from somewhere, but it's quite rare.
Yeah.
Whereas you come to our place and it's black, the only people we don't have actually in the church, in membership, actually are South Asians. We've got, and even then actually we've had some Indians who've come, who'd be South Asian, but not Pakistani, obviously. So even there, we've made some inroad to having every ethnicity represented on some level, which I just think is wonderful for the gospel, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. So a lot of the areas where I grew up, it was the same, predominantly white people, white council estates. Mm-hmm. Very rarely you'd see somebody of a different colour.
Mm.
But where I'm at now in Coventry, it's very multicultural.
Yeah.
Even within the church that I'm in now, you get like the Great Commission within the church, so many different nations within the church, which is really nice, which is really nice to see. That's what the gospel does on it. It breaks them divides and it unites people that are united in Christ.
Yeah.
And what he has done rather than colour or continent or where we're from or our job. That's what the gospel does. It unites us in Christ.
How have you found in your church? I'll talk a bit about ours in a minute, but I think a lot of churches will sometimes have people of different colours in the room. So you might have black, white, Asian in the same space. But in terms of culture and the way the culture operates, there isn't, I wouldn't necessarily call it multicultural. It's like multi-ethnic, but yeah, not really multicultural.
Yeah, that is probably multi-ethnic then rather than cultural.
Okay, that was what I was going to ask. Have you managed to be more multicultural with the different cultures on display, or would you say it's more multi-ethnic really?
From what I've seen, I've been at that church for a year now. So it probably are just multi-ethnic. Cultural, like they bring the cultural differences in like food when we do food and all that kind of stuff. And it's nice, so like some of them still come in their traditional clothes and stuff, Indians and stuff, which is nice, do you know what I mean? What I've found though is like even within the church, a lot of the people from different countries still just sit together.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Rather than mixing with everyone else. My wife's actually really good at intermingling with them, maybe because she's from a different country as well.
Yes.
But you do find that they just congregate together within the church.
Yes. Yeah, and again, to some degree, that's going to be natural. Like, we get a lot of Iranians in ours. One of the reasons they tend to congregate together is because of language.
Yeah.
So it's just hard work, isn't it, trying to speak in a different language all the time, particularly if you're not got much English yet. So they'll often congregate together. I would say, like, the Nigerians and the Cameroonians and other African nations we have represented, they're, because they speak English, I would say they're much better at intermingling with people. I just think language is such a big barrier to people.
Yeah,
it's very, very hard, isn't it, to get people fully integrated and fully engaged and fully on board with what you're doing when they don't have the language ability.
Yeah, it can be a bit of a challenge, can't it?
Yeah. Like, would you have in your church, non-white people who are at the front of church and doing stuff at the front? I don't mean, like, would you block them? Because you're racist.
Yeah.
What I mean is...
No, I think most predominantly...
Have you had any?
I've not seen any since I've been there. I've got a couple of people from, I think it might be from Nigeria. He's got up and done like the Bible readings and stuff like that, but not preaching, leading. I've not seen that, no.
Okay.
I don't think they'd like stop it. I think they'd encourage it.
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to. So what we're hoping to do this year, probably after September to be fair, is to start a preaching group.
Okay.
So anybody that's interested in preaching or feels called or wants to try preaching, we're wanting to do it through Medus. So Medus run a preaching course if anybody's interested.
Yeah.
They want to know how to raise up preachers in their church. Medus can support that.
Yeah.
If anybody's listening for that. So we're hoping to do that. So I think there'll be different people from different cultures and backgrounds then given an opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
I think that'd be interesting. I think it'd be good as well.
I think that's where we need to improve. We have an Iranian guy who leads services for that's us good. Now, which is great. So he's a deacon in the church. It's not the case that we don't have anybody who's in position of authority or position of prominence in the church. But he's the only guy, really, we've got. And he doesn't preach it. And I would like to see more Iranian guys, more African guys, just different cultures being able to be a voice at the front and being themselves as well, not having to copy the way we do it, but being very much themselves.
Yeah,
I think would be positive.
Yeah, I think that would be as well.
I can't remember what else we were asking.
So we were just talking about like different contexts, different cultures, even in the working class. It's changed a lot as well, hasn't it? So culture's changed, areas have changed since I was growing up.
Mm.
Although I've not stayed in the same area, so I've moved different areas. But it's like, how can we... So Medhurst, you've got Medhurst that wants to support, reach more working class people, that they would hear the gospel, that they would come to know the Lord Jesus Christ. But then how we'd like to see that, wouldn't we, like the church filled with working class people, people from every culture and every background. And then we'd like to see more working class people serving in the church as lay or as preachers and leaders of the church.
Yes.
We'd love to see that, wouldn't we? Medhurst is doing it, 20 Schemes is doing it. Do you know of any other ministries out there that are trying to do this work?
I don't. As far as I'm aware, they're the only ones that are focused exclusively on trying to raise up working class people, trying to reach working class people. I suspect there are others who would have it as part of what they're doing. So I'd imagine, I mean, if you said to the FIEC, do you want more working class people in the FIEC? I'm sure they'd go yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would. But they're not focused exclusively on that aim.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got a much wider remit. I think there are probably others who would have it as part of what they would do.
Yeah. The Church of England,
I was
reading an article the other day about it, where like they want to see more working class people as lay and as leaders, but I'm not sure how they're going to do that because there's so many barriers in place.
I mean, the Bishop of Blackburn, for example, is quite big on that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't quite be where we are theologically, he's very big on mission to the poor, mission to the forgotten and deprived place. So he was in Burnley before, which is a rough mill town. Now in Blackburn, which is a rough Lancashire mill town. So he's been banging that drum for us. So there are voices, but again, he's one among not many, really. And if you look at the books that are written on it, I've written on it, Mes McConnell's written on it. There's a lady, an Australian academic, I think, who's involved at Oak Hill College, called Kirsten Burkett. She's written on it recently. And then there's another lady fella whose names I can't remember now, but they wrote a book called Invisible Divides.
Yeah, I've seen that.
They've written on it. That's it.
Yeah.
So I can think of about four people
yeah.
who've written anything substantive on it.
It's not a big voice, is it, really?
No.
So the amount of working class people that are in the UK, more than half of the people in England.
Yeah, because you said you thought about 60%. I mean, the stat...
That might be more, to be fair.
Well, the stat a lot of people have run with, I don't think this is a perfect measure.
Yeah.
But people go... 70% of the country don't have a university degree.
Yeah.
And they go in that. Now, obviously, there are going to be some middle class people who haven't gone to university.
Yeah.
And there are going to be a fair few working class people who have. But if you take that as a blunt instrument, you know, 60 to 70% of people, that's a lot of the country we're not reaching.
It's a hell of a lot, yeah.
And our churches are chock a block full of white middle class people because that is, and it's one of those difficult things, isn't it? Because I don't blame churches for being like that. Because a lot of the time what's happened is Christians exist in an area and build a church around where they are.
Yeah.
Now, the guy, so you get somewhere in the southeast, they plant a church amongst people. It's a white middle class area. You get white middle class people. They're going to reach people like them in their own networks. I don't blame them for being what they are. And it's quite difficult for them then to go, right, how do we reach people who aren't like us? And I think they often have some idea of how to do that overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So we send a missionary, we train them up, we get them to learn the language, we get them to be contextual. And then, you know, hopefully they sort of plant a church and then get one going. But we don't seem to have that same mindset for doing that with people who aren't like us.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Have you seen that yourself?
A little bit, yeah. And I'm like, just again, I've only been in the game for a little short while, do you know what I mean? So just my own experience, just chatting to people, where I think when Ian planted, I think 20 years ago and stuff, he was saying, and other pastors as well, where there used to be...
It's like Ian Williamson in Middlesbrough.
Ian Williamson, yeah, in Middlesbrough. And then speaking to other pastors as well that have been in the game for a while, they were saying there used to be a lot of people wanting to do the work, but there's no funding, no support for them to do it.
Yep.
So it just wasn't happening. Where now there's a bit of a shift where there's funding now, there's support, but there's no people wanting to do it.
Yep.
People, like you said, I think you said it, and another pastor said it's not sexy moving on to a council estate.
No.
It's not nice to like go and live somewhere where you might be rejected, your windows might get smashed, you might get laughed at, you might get mocked at, you're not going to be made famous.
Yeah.
People don't want to do it, you're not guaranteed a salary. It's like,
and even people on the estates, let's be honest, a lot of them want to move off.
Yeah, exactly.
So the idea of moving on to a place that even a lot of people who've been brought up there don't want to live.
Yeah,
you know, it is a tough call, isn't it?
It is.
But one of the churches I went to when I was a kid. So I've lived in two places.
Yeah.
In my life, so Birkenhead was once where I started school, and then Grove in South Oxfordshire was the other. But in Birkenhead, we went to an estate church, so on something called the Ford Estate. And I would say, of all the churches I'm aware of all the denominations I'm aware of, we were in the Brethren at the time, and this little Brethren assembly on the estate, the Brethren are pretty good, I think, about going on to hard areas.
Yeah.
And you might have some questions about what they do when they get there and how they operate and a whole load of stuff. Mm-hmm. But they do go.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Why do you think we don't have so many people doing that now? What do you think are the reasons people aren't so quick and ready to go?
I'm not too sure. I don't know if it's just like a culture thing in the UK that people may not see mission as really important, or they see mission as sending people abroad, going to different countries where we've got like probably more unreached people here than in a lot of places.
Mm.
I don't know if there's like not an urgency,
yeah,
not a desire. I don't know.
Do you find, and have you found it easy to encourage people to go to these places?
Not a lot of people want to do it, not from the people that I've spoke to.
And what sort of reasons do you get from them?
I don't think a lot of people want to move.
Yeah.
People like, they want nice areas where they can send their kids to school and get a good education. And like you say, people want to move off estates. So why do people want to move on?
I think that's the number one issue, actually. I think people idolise their kids.
Mm.
I often think they make the wrong decisions about their kids as well. Thinking what they're doing will serve their kids spiritually, and they don't realise necessarily how they're not actually helping their kids at all. So I hear all the time, we need to go to the church with the big youth group for our kids. We need to go to the place where there's other kids around. We need to go to whatever, but for the kids, we need it to serve them helpfully. I get why people do that. I get why people think that. But I often think it's a wrong calculation, because I think all you really teach your kids is that we're building the church around them and their needs and their desires. And then we wonder why, you know, they go off to another church in another area that, frankly, you know, let's be honest, most churches aren't big, aren't running all sorts of ministries, often won't have people like them in it. And they go there and they go, oh, I didn't get on very well with it, and they don't want to go.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you teach your kids from a young age that actually, you know, we're called to carry a cross for Jesus. Yeah. And that means that the church isn't going to be built around you and your desires. And you might have to reach across things and have friendships with people that actually ordinarily aren't the sort of friendships you would have sought out.
Yeah.
But they are the ones the Lord's provided for you.
Yeah.
I think you teach your kids something more valuable and more helpful. And it, I think, will stand them in better stead for their spiritual life.
Yeah, yeah. I think that... raising them to be risk takers as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I know a couple that are like leading a church and they're teaching their kids very young to be risk takers. They're working on a council estate. It's not comfortable. But yeah, to be risk takers. It's interesting that even within medicine, they're just the short time I've been here and the different places where I'm going, where I'm meeting pastors, a lot of people are coming from abroad to do the work on council estates. There's quite a few Americans. I met a Nigerian that he was like, the UK needs the gospel, so I'll come to the UK. He's planted a church in Keighley near Bradford. I think it's called Keighley, yeah. And then he's going to do another church plant in Bradford. So yeah, it's interesting that other people are coming to the UK to bring the gospel to the UK.
But I think we should be embarrassed by that. As a church, I think they're right that, you know, we need more churches in this country. We've got a wonderful Christian heritage that has broadly gone away. So I think they're right in seeing that from abroad, and I'm so grateful that the Lord's motivated them to come, and that they come and they will lead stuff, and they're happy to do that. But I think the church in the UK should be embarrassed that we're not doing it ourselves. And you know, I've found repeat, like, a lot of our support in our church comes from abroad. Because the UK church just isn't lining up to support us. And I've struggled with that for many years. You know, I think it's very common to find churches that will blow 50, 60, 70 grand on a extension that will let them fit 20 more chairs in their church hall, but they won't give you 100 quid a month just to see your church basically hit its budget, you know. And I think that should be embarrassing to us. It should be a shame to us. But it doesn't seem to be.
I was reading an article in, I think, Christianity Today or something, and a woman was writing the same thing, to be fair. So she, like, works in a church in London, and she was saying that where she lives in the council estate, where they're trying to reach there in the inner city, they can't even afford to employ a family worker. But the churches on the other side of town have got, like, millionaires going to the church. Yet they're not supporting these little churches.
And I don't know what the logic is. I don't know what the reasoning is. I don't want to judge, because they may well be doing all sorts brilliant things with that money that I think is just as worthy, just as valuable. But we seem to have this block about it in ministry to deprived places, to ministry to working class people. Do you think there's something in middle class people that makes them very reticent to do it, or do you think?
Like I said, I don't really know, to be fair. I don't know. So a couple of the churches that I've contacted, so I contacted a church, quite an affluent church, in October. When I first started, I thought I'd contact all my local churches first and then spread out, go further into the Midlands. And then he didn't get back to me. And then I seen him 2 weeks ago, and he was like, oh, I got your email, but it's just not something we're doing. It's just not something where our church is, it's just not a massive priority for our church at the minute. He said, we have a few people come to our church from that background, and we're running an Alpha course, but we're just not in a place to do that. And then another affluent church as well just said the same. It's just not on our radar.
I'm assuming they didn't elaborate as to why it wasn't on their radar.
They just said it's just not, that's not what we're doing at the minute. It's just, it's not on the church's radar.
Yeah, I just find that so sad. Do you know what I mean? Because I'd like to think if I was in any church where there was a group of people either in the locality or within striking distance of us that just would never come into our church, I'd at least want to ask a question, why not? You know, and maybe what could we do that might reach them? I just don't know why you wouldn't do that. Could it be weird, wouldn't it, if you ran an exclusively white church in an area like mine that's full of Asians, and you're like, we don't have a single ethnic minority person coming to our church? You'd at least ask a question, wouldn't you? Why is that? Now, what might we do? But we just don't seem to do that, and I don't know why that is. So what have you found to be the best kind of support for you when you, because you're someone who's obviously gone and wants to do this kind of work, so what have you found to be the best support for you as you go about doing it?
The best support I've probably found in Medhurst and from Ian, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? Knowing that there are people that's doing the same work. They understand the struggle. They understand the heartbreak. The heartbreak with it. They understand the sometimes the slow pace of it, the little fruit of it. I found like, because Medhurst is doing it, like you were saying before, that Medhurst 20 schemes, their primary vision and mission and purpose is to reach the working class or support people to do that.
What do you think needs to change so that we can do that more effectively?
I don't know. I think we need, within the church, more unity in the gospel from whatever culture and background we come from. Do you know what I mean? Because everybody needs the gospel, whatever culture. I don't know whether it's like needs more church support from other churches, more workers, more collaboration.
Well, let's just say there was some geezer from a church said, unlimited resources.
Yeah.
I can do anything. What do you want? What would you tell him?
I want your money.
I think we shouldn't be shy about that. Yeah. I think we have to say, it's the thing I hate doing most.
Asking
for money.
Yeah.
But we've got to be honest, it's the thing that we need. You know, you physically cannot run if you don't have money.
No. And the truth is, if you're working, you're working in an area of deprivation, you've got a few people coming to your church, half of them are not working, they're on benefits, they ain't putting nothing into your offering.
Yeah.
You're not getting direct debits, you're not getting you're not getting tax back and all that. Do you know what I mean? You're just not getting it. So how can you function?
Yeah, I mean, we just about meet our budget.
Yeah.
And we're 60% externally funded in our church. 60%. Because we don't have people. I can tell you now, in full-time work, I can count the number of people in my church in full-time work on the fingers of one hand.
Wow, yeah.
And I'm one of them.
Yeah.
And they're paying me. Yeah. You know, so I think that we've got to be honest about it and say, look, we need money.
Yeah, we do.
Just to fund it. Actually, what's interesting is we don't need a lot of money to function.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What the average budget of a church in a deprived place, I imagine you pay a pastor a decent salary, and with all the expenses and everything that goes with that, you're probably talking about 50K, something like that for that. And then you probably need another 50K for all your running costs.
Yeah.
100K, you'll have a church for a year. Give them £1 million, you've got a church there for 10 years.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Which in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much.
No.
When you think, you know, there are churches that will drop £5 million to do a rebuild. Do you know what I mean?
It's crazy, isn't it?
And you think in those terms, well, £5 million is five churches in a deprived community all funded for 10 years.
Yeah.
Or it's 10 churches all funded for 5 years off that money. And we say, you know, is it a best use of gospel resource? Obviously, you know, if we can have massive buildings for big churches and we can have money going out to deprived communities, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But we don't have unlimited resources.
No, we don't.
And I think we have to think that where do we need to get our resources to go? I've been saying this for 12 years, so I'm not saying anything new, but I think we need a massive, massive move of people and money from the southeast up to the north, from affluent communities to poorer communities, who are all basically going to go, do you know what? I'm going to go and live and work and belong to areas like Oldham and Blackpool and Blackburn and Middlesbrough and, you know, places in the northeast that are cut off and deprived, and I'm going to do that because I just know those places need churches.
Yeah.
And I think unless we get that drum banged, you know, Medhurst can do it.
Yeah.
But I think in reality, those of us like me and Ian, we've been saying this for, you know, best part of 15 years or more, and we kind of feel the people who are going to listen to us have listened to us, and the people who aren't going to listen. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think you need it from more national figures, from more people. I think you need it from the front, from the FIEC on a more regular basis. You need it coming from Church of England and Anglican voices. You need it coming. The people of who have more influence, let's be honest, than we do, they need to be saying it, because
are they banging that drum, or is it quiet? Is it moving? Is it shifting?
It depends who you ask, doesn't it? So I think there was a little period where, to give them their due, I think the FIEC were making noise, and there was a couple of people making noise, but it was a little period of it.
Okay.
You know, so there was nothing. Yeah. I said there was absolutely nothing. The needle moved on it a bit, and there was a little, maybe year or two period, where there was people like Mez and Ian and myself, and this was even before Medhurst existed as a thing, where we were making noise about it, and that was getting picked up, and actually people in the FIEC and some other places were going, yeah, we maybe need to do something about this. But I would say it then all kind of fizzled out a bit. It all kind of drifted away. Impetus died off. Some people were just saying, we're a bit sick of hearing about this. I would say now I don't hear a great deal of noise about it anymore. And I find that dispiriting, because for all the noise that we had, even for that little period, I didn't see vast amounts of money flowing in the direction of poorer churches. Yeah. I didn't see lots of partnerships being built up. I didn't see new churches being planted in hard places. I just didn't see any of the things we were actually asking for happening.
Yeah.
Just a bit of noise. And I think that's the sad thing, really. And those of us who are in those places, I think we would all affirm that actually an awful lot of the support we get comes from overseas and doesn't come from UK churches, which I think is...
It's sad again, isn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, I would not put too fine a point on it. There are some big churches in the UK, and in those churches you've got people who are doctors, who are lawyers, who are teachers, who are doing jobs that exist everywhere. You know, because if you're a teacher or you're a doctor or you're a dentist or whatever, you can do all of that. There are those jobs exist in Oldham as much as they do in London or in Oxford or wherever. And churches that are 100, 200, 300 people could easily stand to send 20, 30, 40, 50 people and still be massive and still be wealthy and still do all the stuff they're doing. To help encourage another church. But those churches themselves don't seem to make a lot of noise about it. And there doesn't seem to be any impetus from the people themselves to go and do it. And I don't know, I think the church is very comfortable. In reality, I think we're very comfortable. If you look at the things that exercise the church the most, it's stuff like... LGBT issues or trans stuff or things to do with Muslims or whatever, like kind of culture war-y stuff.
Yeah.
And when I think you dig into that, I'm not saying those things are right or wrong or whatever. I'm just, it's interesting. They're the things that exercise them. And when you look at why, I think a lot of the time it just boils down to, oh, it's really awkward for me as a Christian having views that they're not mainstream.
Yeah.
And so I'd like the law to change to make my life a bit more comfortable, basically. Mm. Because this is really uncomfortable for me in school or in work or whatever. Yeah. So I just want the law to change so that then my life's a bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to coming to deprived places, I think you've got exactly the same thing in inverse. So they go in, let's talk about culture war stuff because that's making my life uncomfortable. So let's change it so we can be more comfortable. And then on sort of deprived community stuff, they're going, but I'm comfortable where I am and I don't really want to move because that'll be uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's comfort. I really do. And I don't know how we get out of that. I don't know how we help people with that. And I'm not sure. I think it'd be quite easy for people to turn around and go, well, it's all right for you. It's all right for me. Because this is more our background.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You're used to this sort of thing. Where I would go, well, you know, I didn't grow up in Oldham. I didn't grow up around Muslim people.
Yeah.
But you know, I got called here and someone has to go and do it. And, you know, these are the people that the Lord's given me to reach. So that's who we try and reach, isn't it? That's it.
And the Great Commission is the Great Commission, isn't it? Whatever, wherever you come from, if you know Jesus, we're meant to well make disciples, evangelize, whether we come from that culture, that background or not.
So how do you think we can sort of lovingly help people who maybe are feeling quite comfortable where they are, feeling quite comfortable in what they're doing and going, I don't know if that's for me. And how do we help guard ourselves as well? Because I'll be honest, I've never had any great desire to go and move to China and be a missionary, right?
Yeah.
And I can get all annoyed that no one wants to come to Oldham. No one wants to go to the council estate.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go to China. I don't want to go to Africa and do stuff there because, I just don't. So how do we help people see the need and encourage them to take it seriously whilst also like guarding ourselves against hypocrisy of going, there's loads of places I haven't gone.
Yeah. I think we need a massive move and shift from God as well. And the Holy Spirit to like to burn in our hearts the importance of the soul of people, that we won't just see them as people or classes, that we would see them, that them created in the image of God, whether they're in China, they're in Oldham, they're in Middlesbrough, or wherever. I think we need a move of God. I think it's a drum that we just need to keep banging. And then I think that's what's good about Medhurst, isn't it? So like people can, and the weekenders, we do weekenders so people can come and like hear stories, hear teaching about working in the areas of deprivation or areas of working class or areas where there's no church. So then they can taste and see, they can listen to experiences, they can listen to a vision, which they might be able to catch the vision God might speak to them. Because if they're not hearing it, how will they know? And if they're not seeing it, how will they know the direction to go?
Do you think we could do a better job of talking up the benefits and the good things about being in an area like ours?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Do you think people have like an image of like,
I think they do, yeah,
council estate and rough areas, I don't want to go there because that sounds like
it's dangerous.
I'm going to go to Beirut.
It's not comfortable, is it? It's like you're talking about comfortability thing before. I think like a lot of areas, council estates and the cities and all that, a lot of them have got a lot of benefits. Me and Ian Williamson was sharing about the good things of the culture in a podcast. The community, some of the communities, they are very community orientated. They look out for one another, humour, lots of good things. And like, the people are precious, man.
I think it's just very freeing being in a place like this as well. I find working class people to be less judgmental, less harsh critics, do you know what I mean? They'll banter with you, but they're not judgmental. I think, and I unless if your entire church experience has been in middle class churches, I think people are very guarded in those churches. I think partly because there is an underlying middle class tendency to judgmentalism, and everybody's terrified that I'll be judged, so I don't want to say the wrong thing because I'll get judged by it. But if your experience of church has been exclusively in those places, I think you don't realise how freeing it is and how like genuinely enjoyable church can be when you go to a place where that's just not a thing.
Yeah.
And that's not a problem. And I really feel that now when I go to other churches where I sense that culture's there again. I don't think people mean it, and I don't think they're I don't think they're bad people or anything. But it's just part built into the culture a bit. And I really feel it now when I go back to those sorts of places, and I find it quite claustrophobic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's quite difficult. And I just think we could do better about talking up the good things about being here.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You know, you save a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I think it's true, because like when you say like even just the term church in hard places, do you know what I mean? It kind of like puts an idea of someone, it's a really difficult place to live. I'm not going to go and live there.
Yeah. And it's because people think of it as hard.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I think those other places are hard.
Yeah.
I mean, evangelism is so much easier in our communities because I never, ever have trouble getting into conversations about the gospel with people.
Yeah.
Never. Never have trouble talking about sin. Never have trouble talking about hell. Never have trouble talking about all the things that people normally find difficult to talk about. Oh, we need to be really careful about those things. I've never had a problem with them in our community at all.
Do you think that working class people know the lost? They feel the weight of their crimes or their issues more than working middle class people?
Yeah. Well, I think middle class people are trained to cover up.
Mm.
And so the idea of admitting that you're a sinner to somebody who might judge you for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's like the last thing you would do. Whereas working class people, sin is very often lived out.
Yeah,
in open.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to hide, is there?
Yeah.
If you go, you're a sinner, they go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, Muslim people think a bit differently, but we've got loads of things in common with them.
Mm.
I mean, I often start with the doctrine of hell with Muslims. Like the first thing we'll go to.
Yeah.
Mainly because we all agree. We agree there's a heaven, we agree there's a hell. And so really what we're talking about is how do we get to the one and avoid the other, and we've got very different views on that, but that's a good starting point.
Whereas
the idea of starting with hell and sin and judgment with a middle class person, you just wouldn't do it, would you? Wouldn't fly. They'd be like, why is this nutter telling me all about hell? But I think stuff like that's really positive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it makes evangelism easier.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's clear what you're all talking about. It's clear why you're all there. And I actually think people are more receptive to it because they've, you know, in a sense, they're already sort of 30, 40% on the same page as you anyway.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. So what you're really doing is you go in, well, we agree on all of this here.
Yeah.
Let's just push into that a bit more and say, well, why don't you find this bit compelling or that bit compelling? What are the issues with that? Mm. And I think they're much better conversations and much easier conversations.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think we would do well to talk up some of these benefits a bit more. And then we're not talking about hard places.
Yeah.
We're talking about different places, aren't
we? Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe the terminology that we use then.
Yeah, I think that would go some of the way to helping at least.
Yeah.
I think my view's always been as well, a lot of the time, I just want to get people here to see it.
Yeah.
So Medhurst run some vision trips.
Yeah.
And we get people to come and they see our different churches. And my view has always been, and I think this is borne out, most people who come and see what we're doing in person get here and are really surprised by what it looks like because it's not like the picture they had in their heads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They are impressed by the work that's going on. They're impressed by how we're able to do it and what we're able to do. And I've always been of the view, if I can just get people to agree to come and look.
Yeah, just to see it.
Yeah, not to stay, not to commit to anything, but just come and look.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, they'll come, see it and go, huh, church can be like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or we can do these kind of things. They often want to minimally then support you because they've seen it. And sometimes even say, actually, I think we might want to be a part of that. So I would just encourage anyone who's listening to say, you know, could you just go and visit a church in a deprived place? Could you go and see what they're doing, see how they operate? You don't have to commit to anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything. But I think you might just be really surprised by what you find when you get there in a positive and a very happy way that might just shift your mindset on it a little bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. And the kind of taste of days look sound good to me, where they can just go and see, just go and be amongst the people, be amongst the area. Is that some things that you're hoping to do in the future when you
So we've done vision trips in the past, so we've had guys from the States come over and come and look around.
Have we got some other coming over soon as well?
We've got some more who are coming, and part of my role when I start properly in September is going to be building up partnerships with churches. So that's both bringing churches in deprived areas into the network, but also bring in people who could support, and basically doing vision trips with them. So it's not just come to Oldham, but come to Coventry, come to Oldham, come to Middlesbrough, come to wherever, see the different places, because my church doesn't look like yours, and yours won't look like our one on the Beechwood Estate in Birkenhead, and that one doesn't look like ones in Middlesbrough. So we come and have a look at a few different churches, see how they operate, see how they run, see how they function differently, but still biblically. And I think if we can just get more of that, I think we would get quite a long way to getting more people seeing, that's what it is. That's what you're doing. I want to get behind this.
Oh, that sounds exciting. That's good.
Well, it's been really good chatting with you, Gary.
And you, mate.
Hopefully we'll be able to chat again.
Great.